I looked at the article and I was very surprised. With all the hype, with all this excitement, with all the investment, we talk about NVIDIA giving $100 billion to OpenAI. With all of this, you would think that, you know, the success rate would be the opposite, would be 95% success rate, not 5%. I would assume that some are getting negative results.
Welcome back to another episode of Silicon Valley Front Row. I'm David Lam, and this is Steve Ispas. Hey, so for people who have been watching us, they might notice that something is a little bit different about this episode.
Let's ask them if they figure out, but yeah. Maybe tell them anyway.
Okay. It is because we swapped sides. So this is the first episode where you're on the left side, I'm on the right. Yeah, and also we both got haircuts recently. I got mine last night, mm-hmm. and it's a home haircut. So Johnny, please don't zoom in too much
on his haircut.
Yeah, and what about you?
I just got a haircut like a couple hours ago. And there's a bit of a story behind it. I went on over the weekend to get a haircut, and yeah. It was taking forever. This lady that I always go to, you know, there's a guy, they're getting his haircut, and then just when I thought he's done, she's going to wash his hair, right? So I just left. I didn't have patience to wait anymore.
Was it a walk-in or yeah?
It was a walk-in. Yeah. But then today in our office, we put the paper together, the newspaper together on Wednesdays. There's one of the staff who's doing haircuts for 20 years. He's an expert. So
nice.
So he did it, you know, 20 minutes, done.
Yeah.
You know, hey, very convenient.
Yeah, it's nice. That's always good. You know, can you imagine AI barber?
You know, I was thinking about that. Then it's really funny because I saw a video on X about someone who walks on this little, it's like a phone booth or you know, like a little booth on the street.
Uh-huh.
And they have really big hair. In this case, a girl. She has like long hair.
Yeah.
She sticks her head in and then a few seconds later, she comes out and it has all braided, you know. And
that's so crazy.
The funniest thing is on the bottom, it says this video is AI generated, you know, so it's not real. But yeah,
that's,
I guess it could happen.
Yeah, I guess it could. Would you use it?
I don't think so. I wouldn't trust those scissors.
So
what are we talking about today?
Yeah, so today we're going to talk about this article from based on an MIT study. It found that 95% of groups that use generative AI failed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I looked at the article and I was very surprised. I mean, with all the hype, with all this excitement, with all the investment, we talk about NVIDIA giving $100 billion to OpenAI. With all of this, you would think that, you know, the success rate would be the opposite, would be 95% success rate, not 5%.
Yep.
And they have the graph right here out of the report that shows what's implemented. And just to clarify on this one, general purpose LLMs, they had 40% success. And by that, it's really just ChatGPT and Copilot. That's what they mean. That 40% of the people end up using those tools. Even that, I thought would be higher than that. But it's 40%. But when it comes to this more task-specific Gen AI, it's 5%. So very surprising. I'll read a short quote here from the report. It says, to be specific, despite $30 to $40 billion in enterprise investment into Gen AI, the report uncovered a surprising result in that 95% of the organizations are getting zero return. And I actually think they're more polite than it is, because I would assume that some are getting negative results in the sense that they waste time, because every time you have to implement something, you have to figure it out, right? So they waste time, so they probably have negative returns, meaning they wasted more time than the results they got.
Interesting. So more on this report, I mean, what's the reason? Is it mainly the reason of wasting time that these businesses or these groups failed?
It sounds like they talk about friction. And by friction, they really mean resistance to a new thing. And I think it's more than that. I think they don't actually see the value. They don't see the value. They don't think that it probably saves more time. It's probably not worth learning how much you have to learn or implement to get a better result or to make up for the time you wasted in learning. And actually, another reason that they mention is what they call the verification tax. So what they mean by verification tax is that what's taxing time, you know, verifying. So a lot of these tools are wrong. They give the wrong result or they give the wrong explanation. So that's why a lot of the people use them, they actually have to verify. The time they verify actually takes longer than if they would have done it by themselves. It's a double verification.
Yeah. So, you know, about that, so I was listening to a U.S. House hearing where Congress members were hearing testimony from researchers, from a researcher and doctors. So this psychiatrist is saying that the large language models, sometimes they're being used in research reports, but he's cautioning against that and making sure, saying that people should be the final reviewer to check over these things. I think that ties into what you mentioned. Now, more about this report by the MIT students. It's a 2025 report, and the study was conducted from January through June this year. And they reviewed more than 300 AI initiatives, conducted interviews with 52 organizations, where they surveyed senior leaders among different sectors. So this is a pretty wide survey or study.
One more thing I would like to add about the students doing this report. I think that's a really good thing because students are usually the ones who come out with new ideas. They're not as much concerned with being politically correct or following a narrative. They feel that this is the right information. They're just going to do it. They want to establish themselves. They're learning. They're young, right? So they want to go ahead and run with it. I think that's fantastic because, again, if this study was done by a think tank that's being funded by an AI company or an AI consortium or someone related to AI, I think the results would have been quite different, would have made it look a lot better. And even this is looking pretty good, but still the obvious result is that they're not working 95% of the time and they have zero result. So students doing it, I think, is great.
Yeah, props to the students.
Yeah.
And another thing is from the report, I saw that part of the consequences of avoiding friction is because after there's an error or so, some of the people, the users, don't try to fix it, don't try to train or modify these the AI, and that added on to the failure rate.
Ah, good point. Let me read also another quote here from the report. It says, again, 60% of the organization evaluated tools, 20% reach pilot stage, and just 5% reach production. Most failed due to brittle workflows, lack of contextual learning, and misalignment with day-to-day operations. Now, this misalignment with day-to-day operations, I think it's a polite way to say that they are either useless or they create more work than it's actually being and ended up as a result. So basically, the solution is worse than the problem. So, or it takes more work to do through them than doing it yourself.
A paradox.
Yeah.
So, what if these initiatives or companies managed to train the AI models and didn't avoid friction? Do you think the results would have been different? And if so, like by how much?
That's a good question. Probably would have been different. But I think in the long run, by doing that, they would have less productivity overall. And for so many companies, it's not the hype or the political consensus or the narrative that matters. It's the bottom line, right? The P&L. And then you try hard to implement something and maybe actually make it work in some ways. But if that process took longer or actually dropped your P&L, you lost money or productivity because of that, then any CEO, they have to be crazy to go with it. Now, if in the future that improves, maybe that's a different story. But I tend to think that these companies are pretty smart and they realize that it's not worth doing it. And it's not just for not teaching the tool the right reasons. It's probably more of a productivity issue. It takes more effort to use it than not to use it. That's what I would guess is the bottom line. It's almost like, I'll give a weird example. So you have to do a calculation, right? You want to do three-digit number calculation. So it takes a bit of time to do it on paper. So you say one person starts to calculate on paper, the other one has to use a calculator, but he doesn't have a calculator. So he has to go out to look for one, or maybe he has to go buy one. It takes him half an hour to come back with a calculator, and this guy finished like in 5 minutes. That's the kind of example.
Oh, gotcha, yeah. And if they have their phone on them, they open it up and stuff, right? But
if they didn't have a phone, right?
Yeah, I see. They're relying on a tool, and it's got to be on, right? So what if the app crashes, the calculator app?
Exactly.
They didn't have it. But yeah, there is a learning process.
Or if it's repetitive, if the function is repetitive, like ChatGPT or these things, it's repetitive because all you got to do is you type it in and you get answers, right? But if you got to do much more complicated steps, and then you did one, but the next time you have to do something else, then it's going to, again, be a productivity issue.
This reminds me of a term that my brother used before called a barrier to entry.
Uh-huh, right? Yes.
Quick story about, it's funny because he gifted me a wooden charcuterie board.
Okay.
And I use it to cut meat.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until like a year after he gifted it that I used it. And the reason why was I didn't have
the right knife,
the right oil. Because a brand new wooden board, apparently you have to oil it for a bit. So then it's to protect the board.
Yes.
So he told me that when he gifted it to me, but I didn't get it until a year later. And I told him, hey, I finally got it. And he's like, oh, wow. So I guess that's the barriers to entry, right?
That's a very good example. Well, hopefully we can ask our audience what they think. Maybe we can go with the questions. Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, so in every episode we ask questions. And so we want to read about two questions this episode from our viewers. All right.
And then we'll ask new questions for this episode.
That's right. So actually the first one is one of our popular episodes was the one about the environmental impact and water use. Mm-hmm. With Jim Beach, our a very great guest. So someone responded in Spanish, actually, a whole paragraph, but I translated it to English. Let me show it here.
And we appreciate all the comments you have. Please keep them coming. And even if they're in different languages, we appreciate it even more. Now, David, I do speak Spanish a little bit, but I think it's better to read it in English so everyone can easily understand.
Do you want to read the first sentence started off in Spanish?
Let me try. Trato de reciclar siempre. Vivo cerca de una planta recolectora de materiales reciclables y eso ayudó mucho.
Okay.
Yeah. I think English is going to be a lot easier.
Okay. All right. So that's from a person named, well, the username is numbers. It's 10504099. So mucho gracias. Thank you. So, he said, or this person said, I always try to recycle. I live near a recycling center, and that helps a lot. I've tried to do the same with organic waste, but the options where I live are very expensive. The immediate impact I see is on my family. My younger children are more aware of what they consume and the waste it generates. They opt for cardboard or glass packaging if they need to take things there. Having a recycling center is also a great help, and many local people are joining in and bringing their recyclables. The best impact I've seen is the increased awareness it's generated among people and businesses nearby. I know it's limited to a few families, and it's just what I observe, but it's a big change. So thank you again for this comment. What do you think, Steve?
They have a great point. I think it always feels good to recycle, as anyone, you know, helps the environment, helps everything. But sometimes it's not easy, and you have to have the right process, the right environment to do it. And to recycle water through a plant, it's not, you know, it's not as easy as it sounds, because in order to recycle it, you need a whole system that brings it back in, which may be using a lot of power that you're trying to generate in the first place. So the difficulty of recycling is it comes into place.
You know, I feel good when I try to recycle, because I have a separate box. I have in the kitchen, there's a trash.
Exactly.
And then a recycling box.
Very easy, right?
Yeah. So, but apparently for food waste, like to-go boxes or like soda cups, you have to remove the residue. So if there's like oil or food in it, apparently it affects how the recycling process goes. So I try to rinse my stuff, mm-hmm. but I found out like kind of just it takes a longer process.
The second question from last time we're going to go from is from eHoops31. She says, looks like a student. She says, the water heats up, which is part of the reason it's bad to put it back into the environment. Maybe, maybe not. We don't know. I think she's probably right. Why can't we use that energy instead of throwing it out with the wastewater? I think it's an excellent question. Again, it sounds like a student. And yes, I think in physics and probably in school, you learn that if you have energy in heat, potentially there's a system, there's a device that you can put it through and then create energy, take that energy from the heat, and then you get cold water coming on the other side. And then you have both gains, right? You got energy and you have the cold water going out. The problem is that to have that device, that system that creates, transforms this energy into useful energy, mm-hmm. heat into energy, it's one, very expensive and hard to implement on a large scale.
Because imagine implementing this for the data centers, for these, yes. for the AI, right? How much of a system, how big do you need it to be?
Right. Now, can it be done? Maybe. This would actually be something interesting to find out if this would be implemented by NVIDIA or OpenAI or whoever runs the data centers. My guess would be that it costs them a lot more to do this than to get fresh water or new water from the river or whatever they get it from. But it'd be interesting to see. I think great questions. Yeah. Please keep your questions coming. We appreciate that. We try to get through as many as we can and to make it fun for you. Now, let's talk about the questions for this week.
Yeah. All right. So first question is, do you use AI or ChatGPT in your daily life?
Yes. We'd like to see how many of you use it in daily life. And the second question is, would you use a more advanced AI technology system other than ChatGPT or Open or Copilot or whatever? Meaning something to do your taxes, something to do your haircut, you know, whatever was available. Would you venture into something like that? Please put your comments below.